This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
Joining me in the studio is Isaac.
Evening.
A new guest, Joseph.
Hello.
And welcome back, Lizzie.
Hi.
And shortly we will be joined by the head of speech, Jeremy, and Martin, who you met last week. So, our first film in the string of films is A Star Is Born, where Bradley Cooper is making his directorial debut. I'll just quickly give you a rundown of the synopsis of the film. It's a third remake of a 1937 film, and it stars Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. Every version of the story follows the same premise: an aspiring talent meets and falls in love with an established star who is slowly ruining his career with alcoholism and addiction. Over the course of the film, the protagonist becomes more successful and begins to overshadow their partner. So very quickly, have we all seen this film that's currently in?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And we'll go around in a circle. Will you briefly give your first impressions of this film, please, Lizzie?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really, really quite good. I get that it's kind of telling a story. We've seen kind of this film, as it were, four times, and it's kind of a story we've seen a lot. But I thought it did some really new and interesting things with it. I really liked, mostly especially how well it captured like the music, especially things like the feelings of like concerts and things like that. I thought that was a really strong point of the film.
Especially since it's Cooper's debut.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought some of the music was really good as well. It's been written by Willie Nelson's son, I think it is, Lucas Nelson, a lot of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
There was one of the songs has, of course, been nominated for the best original song. Is that Shallow?
Yeah, that's Shallow, yeah.
Shallow's a great song.
It's very good. The music was really good, which obviously you want in a film about music. I thought it captured all that stuff really well. I actually thought Lady Gaga was really good in it as well. I was kind of surprised because I'd only ever seen her in like American Horror Story, where she's like some kind of vampire in bizarre clothing, so it didn't seem too far from her career, as it were. And even though this role is kind of tailor-made towards her, like she's never going to get anything this close ever again.
Yeah.
I don't know, I thought she was really good at kind of portraying this character that wasn't sure of herself. And like my mum said to me as well, you kind of have this moment when she sings and you go, oh, she's really good. And then you go, of course she is, she's Lady Gaga. But it takes you that minute to kind of remember. Yeah.
So the ironic thing about that is, or maybe this was actually deliberate irony, is that the film talks about image quite a lot and being yourself and how the pop industry can corrupt your original like image into something more acceptable. I was thinking, well, Lady Gaga started her career being deliberately bizarre.
Mm.
Now, to be fair, that is probably true to the image she wanted, but that's not the person behind the makeup. And I was wondering what attracted her to this role. Do you think she was unhappy at the start of her career, or do you think
We don't know.
I mean, I don't have anything about what she's actually ever said. I think it has been questioned about that, like, you know, she put out pop music to break into the scene and all this kind of stuff and to do these really outlandish things. And I think that is still part of her, like all these like the meat dress and like coming out of an egg at an award ceremony and things like this and all this kind of stuff.
Saying that's not the typical pop star.
Yeah. So it's a little bit beyond.
Joseph, would you like to tell us your first impressions of the film?
Just to continue on with that, I think that it was really great to see Lady Gaga so sort of stripped back and sort of allowing her to be herself.
Yeah.
A different style of actress that that we're not used to seeing, sort of. And you think if you had like an A-lister in this role, it'd be somehow distorted. But because it's a completely different version of someone that we're familiar with, it really works as like breaking out a new star, as the film is about. I think it's really strong in its look. I think Bradley Cooper does a really good job in terms of his direction for the first time. I think immediately you get that impression where it's just like, this is something that you can tell he's sort of built towards, and him self-delivers probably the best performance of his career because of it as well.
Definitely, yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Isaac, would you like to tell us your first impression of this film?
You guys pretty much said what I think. I think it's, I really enjoyed it. And it is a story that's been told multiple times. It's not like it completely diverts from it or like contradicts it, but it does feel, its approach to us, to the story we've, this tale, you know, and a very classical story, it does it in a way which is subtle. Like, it doesn't, it feels very subtle, even though the film is very kind of energetic, it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel, you know, the opposite of subtle.
Yeah.
And again, the music is great. The music, it's not just that it's great, but it's appropriate. I'll get into my opinion maybe a little later about the music itself, but the music is really appropriate for the film, and yeah, pretty much I can't really, I don't want to repeat what everyone else has already said.
I said before the show, it's a great controversy, that I did not enjoy this film as much as the critics, as, you know, like, would represent it as. The sort of cheesy element to the story and the more, how do you describe it, Isaac, between the two characters?
Schmaltzy.
Or like the romantic vibe between the two characters and the story that's trying to build is sort of overshadowed by the more melodramatic moments. Now, that's a weird thing to try and define, you know, what's the difference between drama and melodrama. And I'd say it's sort of the contrast between what they set up between the two characters and what they try to pull off later didn't match for me tonally. And what they were going for, maybe it's just a personal thing to me, but it didn't quite connect in the way they wanted it to for me.
I mean, I kind of disagree with that.
That's
I didn't really feel that the, like, I get that the romance has that kind of schmaltzy, like, here is here is this nobody being picked up by a really famous person kind of thing. But I think the additions of things like the, well, I don't know if they're additions from the previous versions, but things like Bradley Cooper's characters, alcoholism and drug abuse and stuff like that,
yeah,
it always left this kind of, like, knife-edge tension to me, because you were constantly guessing, like, how drunk is he in this scene? How much is he had in this scene? How many drugs is he on? And then you get to see at some point some of the stuff he's doing with combining drugs and alcohol, and you see how terribly that goes. And I liked that kind of, like, I always felt like Lady Gaga's character, that Aunt Ali, she'd gone into the relationship kind of with her eyes open. Because, yeah, you know, anytime he'd say, you know, like, oh, I've not had any alcohol, she'd go, okay, well, we'll see how long that lasts. And, like, she was really on it. And you got, like, the feeling as well from her family background that she wasn't about to take any, like, rubbish off him.
And our next film, which is my personal favourite of the lot, so there's a bit of bias there. These four movies we'll see next week, if anything takes that place. And to introduce it to us is going to be Lizzie.
Oh, wow. Okay. it's been a while since I've seen this. It's like November. Okay, so we're talking about Black Klansman, which is directed by Spike Lee and stars John David Washington, Adam Driver, and Laura Harrier, I think it is. Laura Harrier, Topher Grace. Okay, so Black Klansman is essentially about a black police officer in the 1970s, played by John David Washington. It's based on a real story. And it's essentially about him kind of infiltrating the KKK. He kind of just does this thing where he's wants to get some more information, basically, and just kind of assumed that by ringing up the KKK, he'd just kind of maybe get some literature about it, and he could kind of, you know, educate himself about what was going on at the time, and, you know, what was going on in their kind of police, like, section as well, like,
yeah,
what's, you know, within their jurisdiction. And he just ends up essentially joining. But obviously you get into this kind of point where, because he's black, he can't go to the Klan meetings and stuff. And so then you get this, John David Washington talks to the KKK on the phone, and then Adam Driver goes to the meetings in person.
Yeah.
And it's also very interesting to note that Adam Driver's character is Jewish, and then that's also something that plays into kind of the dealings with the KKK.
That is a brilliant way of putting it.
Okay.
Shout out to Topher Grace, who we kind of made fun of a bit last week for his,
yeah, for Venom.
But he plays the KKK leader David Duke in this movie, and it's one of his the best performances of his career, and he's like is basically a supporting character to the supporting characters almost. But he does a fantastic job for what screen time he has, and also there's another Alec Baldwin cameo in this. There was one in A Star Is Born.
Yep.
I really couldn't let that slip. So first up, we're going to go to Isaac, and we're going to find out what he thought about this film.
I should say also, I think it's my favorite film of 2018.
Good pick.
And of the eight nominations, it's in my top three of what I would like to win most. That being Black Klansman, The Favourite, and Roma. I don't have one or the other. They're very, you know, they're different reasons why.
You'd be happy with all three.
Yeah, any of those three, really. And it's so energetic.
Yeah.
It's
not blunt. You couldn't.
It's blunt, but it deserves to be it. Like, it feels like it earned its kind of really kind of energetic approach to filmmaking. And what I like most is that even though you got the, even though it's set in the 70s and it feels like a 70s crime film, like Serpico or French Connection, it does feel very modern, sometimes more subtly, but most of the time very directly. Like, I'll name an example of a scene when there's the KKK who say, you know, America first, America first. Even though they're not saying make America great again, you can just feel...
Deliberate parallels,
you can feel
yeah.
that energy. You just feel it just come out of the screen.
I think America first is something that Trump actually does say as well as
I know, but make America great again. Make America great again is like that. It's like a... It's like, and it's
it's not quite the same soundbite. Yeah,
but you can feel that kind of mentality come through. So that's like a key scene when I was first watching it. I was giggling a bit because it was like so unsubtle, but I was
surreal almost.
Surreal. I know there are really funny moments. I wouldn't say it's a comedy.
I was laughing out loud in the cinema. Same. My whole audience was.
Yeah, I saw it in a packed house and it was really good.
Yeah, experience. I saw it in a pretty packed house as well, and it was really great to kind of have that. But it's brilliant because for one moment it kind of like sends you from a safe laugh to like a nervous laugh. Yeah, and like, that's really great about the whole thing.
That whiplash doesn't, it feels earned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's deliberate.
So, yeah. Joseph, what do you think of this film? You have seen it, right?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, it's been a while. So I saw it in the summer when it was first released. Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was really entertaining. I think it was a good shift from the normal summer films that you see around this time. I thought John David Washington was great, as well as Adam Driver. I think they're really strong performances from people that deserve these kind of roles, bigger roles. I think it's because the thing is, right, because it's a hard-hitting, at times, film. It covers some important themes that can be relevant to other topics, but does it in an entertaining way that makes it feel like a bit of a caper. You know, you've got your good guys, your bad guys, and it's genuinely thrilling and exciting to watch.
Liz, you've already said a bit about it, but would you like to summarise what you liked about it?
There's so many different elements to it. I think I like that you're always on this kind of knife edge of tension, whether you're kind of not sure when you're going to get like a laugh that's like kind of safe, which is kind of
something
where
a bit more harrowing.
Yeah, you kind of jump from kind of like these kind of sort of bits in like the police department where you kind of feel the camaraderie, everybody feels relatively safe except for the odd cop who's a bit very racist. But you know, you get this kind of camaraderie of them laughing at the KKK and kind of giggling and like having to like cover up the phone because he's talking on the phone. And you know, there's a great moment when he kind of says he'll meet the KKK and everyone just goes, yep, okay, have fun with your friends, bye, like before they construct the whole plan. Yeah. And that's just, I think that's great. But then it does send you into these kind of really harrowing moments. There's a very particular story in this film, like about like halfway, like two thirds into the movie, that one character tells. That scene just made me feel so sick and horrible.
I'd love to talk about this for longer, but very quickly, give a very short recommendation, or not recommendation, starting with Lizzie.
Yep, watch it.
Joseph?
Yep, I would recommend this film.
Fantastic. Highly recommended. Watch it now.
And it's the same for me, and out of the four, like I said at the start, of the four so far, this is probably my favourite. We're joined in the studio by our head of speech, Jeremy.
Hello, thank you very much for having me on for this.
Our film now is Black Panther. Would anyone like to introduce the plot of this? Don't all speak at once. Jeremy, do you think?
Yeah. Okay, I'll give it a bit of a go. I'm probably not as good as the experts on the panel, I'll say that first off. But so the general gist of Black Panther, obviously, it's the follow-up. It's sort of an indirect sequel to Captain America Civil War. It's following on the character that's introduced during that film. It's set up quite a few themes with it, but it also follows on a little bit of the themes that are set up actually in Avengers Age of Ultron, namely Ulysses Klaue, played by Andy Serkis. He's reintroduced into this. The film actually starts off, it takes place actually quite a few years beforehand. It takes place, I believe, in the 1990s in Auckland, is where it starts off, where we have T'Challa's father, King T'Chaka. He visits his brother, who it turns out has been working with Klaue to smuggle vibranium out of Wakanda and been selling it illegally. Unfortunately, he's then killed off in the opening scene, and that sets the underlying plot, because it's a bit weird with Black Panther. There's sort of multiple plots going on at once, which is, I think, sort of why quite a lot of people like it. It's a bit more multifaceted than some superhero films, where there's usually a very clear A plot and a very clear B plot. But the general thing is T'Challa arrives back home after the events of Civil War. He goes through the standard ritual of having to prove himself in a trial by combat to be the King of Wakanda and the Black Panther.
We won't spoil too much, but
no,
because it is very important later on. We'll get into that a little bit. I'd just like to welcome Martin to the studio.
Hello, hello, hello.
How's it going? Yeah, you've seen this? You've seen Black Panther, haven't
you? Yeah, I have. I've definitely seen Black Panther.
So we're going to very quickly go around in this giant circle and ask people what their first impressions of the film are, starting with Isaac.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
I'll make one impression. Happy Ryan Coogler's getting great success, because I'm a big fan of his two previous films, Fruitvale Station and Creed, so that's all I think I'm about to say.
Have you seen it, Joseph?
Yes, I have. I saw it 2 days ago, so in preparation for this show.
What did you think?
I liked it a lot. I'm not a big blockbuster fan, or don't watch many Marvel films, but I found this very enjoyable. You know, it's got a very good visual style to the film, which I liked a lot. I just think it's a I think it's a well-made film. Good to watch. Yeah.
What do you think, Jeremy?
I'm quite a sucker for a superhero movie, so I did enjoy it a lot. But what I liked about it as well, and I watched it with a couple of people here from URN, I remember we came out and we thought it was a little bit more sort of Hamlet, sort of Shakespearean-esque in the sense of a lot of the plot dynamics that go on, which actually was really nice to see because obviously, you know, it's been what we're now at the 10-year anniversary of Marvel. It's quite nice to see that they've evolved their stories a bit more from here's the good guy, here's the bad guy. It's now sort of a bit more ambiguity. So I really liked that actually. I thought it was a bit more of a mature Marvel film.
Martin?
Absolutely. I don't think it's the greatest film, but I think it's a very innovative and very progressive film at the same
time. We'll talk about the style of it in a second. Lizzie, what did you think?
I actually completely agree, I think, with Martin. I really enjoyed it. It's not my favourite Marvel film by a long shot, but it is very innovative. There's a lot of stuff I really respect about it. I was just saying in the break that I really want the soundtrack to get the Oscar nominated. Well, it's got the Oscar nominated, I want it to win its category. And I think there's a lot going on in the costume as well that's really, really good. But I was just saying as well, I think it has some pacing and writing issues that I maybe think it isn't necessarily like the same caliber as some of the other best picture nominees in that department, which is a creative writer, that's the thing I always look for. But at the same time, it's really, really good. So
I rewatched this film today, and one thing I really do like about it is because they mix African tradition and this sort of futuristic
city. Afrofuturism, I think.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think
it creates this very unique style for the film, which really lends itself to the story they're trying to tell and gives it kind of a unique visuals, if you know what I mean, compared to a lot of the more blander films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But one thing holding it back is that I think it does follow the structure of a typical Marvel solo film, close enough that it makes me think it could have done a lot more experimenting wise. Does anyone agree or disagree strongly with that?
Yeah, I think it's always a case of like, I think you're limited in fitting this into the full cinematic universe, you know, to make it to stand out. So I think like it could have been shot a bit differently. I do like the style of it, but I feel like it had to fit in with being projected in widespread in cinemas and IMAX, 3D, whatever you want, just to make it fit within the times. But then again, I think it's very, very modern in the way it looks, which I think is very important.
Oh, yeah, I have nothing against the
and
style.
I think it's a very good representative for cinema in 2018, I would say, this film.
One thing I didn't like is the CGI. Now, it surprises me. It's actually been nominated, not at the Oscars, but a couple of other awards have given it, like...
It won the BAFTA for visual effects, but it's not even nominated at the Oscars. It seems a bit bizarre, that, to me.
That did stand out to me. I didn't like the overuse of CGI at the end. I feel like that could have been
yeah, the
a
end
bit
for
more
sure.
Personal.
I would agree. I found some of that stuff quite a bit of a CGI mess, if you want to call it. Like the last sequence as well is got a lot of like bright colors and bright lights going on, and you kind of lose the fight sequence in a way. So I agree with that.
Yeah.
The way it uses technology, I don't know if anyone agrees with this. It makes use of that old idiom about magic and technology being indistinguishable from people that don't understand, but I do feel like a criticism of the film is it does use it as a crutch sometimes.
Definitely.
I think I would agree, but at the same time, that's kind of par for the course in Marvel. Like, I watched Infinity War again the other day with my family, and, you know, Tony Stark now just has a nanotech suit, and the second I saw the suit, I was like, they're just going to say it's nanotech, and he's like, nanotech, you like it? And I was like, okay, we're relying on nanotech again. It's not new to rely on these things as part of the genre in any case, I think, at this point.
I don't think anyone will disagree that it's a very important film, but how does everyone feel about being nominated for Best Picture? We're actually going to go around the circle for that. But we'll start with Isaac.
I have no problem with it explicitly because I can't really make an impression because I haven't seen the film. But it's kind of interesting, of all the history of superhero films, even, you know, for not even years, but decades, that this is the first one. Like, remember, like...
Not even Dark Knight.
Not even, to a lesser extent, Logan or Spider-Man 2, which to me are like my favourite superhero films, and I think the best. It's just, interestingly, that Black Panther is the one, which I understand, and I don't even have a problem with. It's just, you know... But personally, I think it should have been, like, one of the first, not the first, because there are films that deserve Best Picture nomination.
I agree.
I think this is sort of the point, though, because back in 2009, when they first created the extended field in Best Picture, the previous year it was only five. That's why Dark Knight got omitted. And after that, we've had had an extended field, which is seeing more of these sort of audience pictures, blockbusters, get into this category. So the following year, we had like District 9 and Up, and we've had since then like Toy Story 3 and Mad Max Fury Road and Get Out, these kind of films that were audience films and did well at the box office that represent it in this category. I think what's important about it getting in here is that it's the only film other than A Star Is Born which is set in the modern day, and that film is adapted from a 1930s story. So I think this is really important in representing 2018. I mean, it's not going to win, but I think it's great that it's there in terms of representing the minorities as well as audiences, what they like.
Jeremy?
I pretty much agree with what's actually been said. That I think more of the fact that it's surprising that it isn't, I mean, I think we've all sort of agreed that, you know, it's a good film, definitely, but it's not sort of the best superhero film, definitely. I think it's a bit surprising that better superhero films that have come before weren't the ones that broke that trend and were in that category. For Black Panther, though, the thing which probably is certainly helping up is the fact that people point to its wider significance, the fact that it integrates a lot of different aspects into the film. Obviously, you know, it's wider aspects as to the nature of you know, the majority of the cast, and also for the directing. I think that's certainly something which deserves praise. It's just a bit of a, I'm not going to say shame, because I do think it's a good film. I do enjoy it. I do agree, though, that I think the writing's a bit formulaic by the end of it. I do think the CGI is certainly, specifically, I mean, it's not giving away. Like, for example, the rhinos, I think if anyone knows the film, they know what I mean with those. They're definitely a bit of a questionable aspect of the film. And also, I think the use of vibranium as sort of the magic cure that can fix anything is a bit of an odd move. But I'm quite glad it's in. I think certainly for its commercial success and the impact it had in sort of the wider society at the time, that has to have given it a bit of a push and a leg up. And like Joseph was saying, I think probably it's been aided by the fact that they've widened the category, the numbers of ones which they can accept into it. I think overall it's a good thing, but I agree. I can't see it winning, really. But I think it's just good. It's got the recognition.
Yeah, mine?
Okay. So, guys, let's address the elephant in the room, right?
Go ahead.
We've had, Hollywood is under a lot of pressure. Oscars are under a lot of pressure, right? There's a big underrepresentation of minorities.
Yeah.
So I feel at this point, after all this campaigning and all this stuff which is happening, Hollywood has to sort of overcompensate. And I feel that, absolutely. I don't think Black Panther is a good film, or not good enough to be part of the Oscars, right? I feel like it's part of inclusion, or some part of something to overcompensate.
Yeah, because it's hard to, you know, like, I agree with that. I more agree than disagree. But again, when we talk about like Oscar voters, or we always talk of them as like a whole, not like a hive mind, like the Borg from Star Trek: The Next Generation. Yeah. I don't know.
We should do like a longer episode about this at some point. Right. But very, very quickly, Lizzie, would you want to talk about that?
Yeah, no, I actually really agree with Martin. I think, especially since they cut the what was going to be the best popular category.
Yeah,
I looked at that category and I went, that's because they don't want to give Black Panther a best picture, and they're just they're compensating
themselves
because they've got to represent it. And then everyone said, no, we don't want that, and they said, okay. And then they knew that
double-edged sword.
They knew that was the film they couldn't get away with not doing, and rightfully, because it is a movement and it's important, and the representation in Hollywood is sorely lacking, both in like the people of color department, but also, I mean, even as a woman, I welled up in the cinema seeing like just four female faces together. It made me remember that I didn't get to see the other female characters in Marvel together that much at any point in time, and I was like, oh, that's what that feels like. That's nice. I like it. So it's very important. I don't think it's best picture quality. I think it's got issues. I respect it. It's maybe not best picture, but again, it is that compensation that Martin was talking about, I think.
Our next film is Bohemian Rhapsody. Just very quickly, it claims it's a biopic about Freddie Mercury and the formation and success of Queen. But straight away, I'm going to jump right into, I disagree with that it's a biopic, because it plays so loosely with the story and compresses so much information, and some of it is straight up just fictionalised, that it feels more like it's reading off of a Wikipedia page. Starts off like pre-Queen, like around the time he meets the original Brian May and Roger Taylor band, which was called Kiss. And it compresses so much information straight away, because Freddie Mercury actually knew them before this and had been asking to get into the band for a while, but they only actually let him in once their original lead singer had left, which we see in the film, but it positions it like it's the first time they've ever met. And there's this really cheesy moment where he like sings to impress them. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So straight away, the film gets off on kind of a rocky foot for me.
I think it's difficult because I think starting out as far back as I think it's Smile is the
yeah,
band.
That's right, Smile.
Not Kiss.
Yeah, I call it Kiss.
Yeah, I was like, that's a very different vibe.
Yeah, I was just remembering the big logo.
The big lips, yeah. No, going back as far as Smile, I get it, but I have to admit, for the first half an hour, I was like, oh, you took up too much story than you could chew, really. It was kind of just going like, it was like, you know, next scene. It was going like, just get to the point where they are Queen. Yeah. And it was like, you could have just kind of started when they were Queen, and I would have been quite happy. I didn't feel I needed to see.
Yeah, I was surprised, to be honest.
Smile. It does have some cheesiness. I think that's kind of just part. It's going to be part and parcel of the whole thing at this point. To say it's inspirational, I mean it is, because Freddie Mercury was and still is to this day. So I don't.
In that context.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I think sometimes it dilutes Freddie more than it should have done.
One of the notes I made at like the start of the film is they could be diving a lot deeper into the more negative sides of Freddie's personality.
I mean, I think that they do some of that. And in fairness, I think they try to actually play, and this was something I did have an issue with, they try to play his flamboyancy as a negative. And I think sometimes that's good. And
pushing people away.
I think sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. But I would like to have seen more nuance in that aspect of him. I know people's big complaint about this movie was to do with the AIDS and the fact that people didn't go
into
it.
They said he was diagnosed before Live Aid, the famous performance, but actually it was 2 years after. By the way, that Queen never split up. This is not a biopic, because Queen never split up like they did at the end of the second act.
No, what's surprising reading about the historical inaccuracies, it's not that, like, it was why. Like, the actual true story, Queen can make a movie. It can make many movies. I would love to see more movies.
Several different stories.
Yeah, like, it's, you don't have to structure it as like some, like, you don't have to structure it in such a formulaic way, because their story just would make, it makes a great film on its own terms.
Do you three want to recommend any better biopics, since you haven't got much to say about this one? Can you think off the top of your head any biopics you would recommend?
Music biopics.
No, it doesn't have to be musical.
I think it's been a long time, but I'd recommend the Todd Haynes Bob Dylan biopic, I'm Not There, because it's six, seven different actors. Like, it does it deliberately to show the various points in Bob Dylan's career. Or even and it's not a musical biopic, but Jackie Kennedy biopic, because the film's like, we're not going to do her whole life story. We're going to do what's really important in her life, which is the death of JFK, and then sort of that kind of brief period where it's like, you know, the assassination to the funeral and what happens after. You don't have to do a life and death. And that's what they could have done. They could have done a specific moment in Queen's career, because you could do so much in their history.
Instead of trying to get from before Queen to like, Live Aid, that's 15 years.
Yeah, you could have just done like a, you know, Live Aid in its own terms.
Can you think of all
mine? I'd like to see Beatles. Maybe we've seen John Lennon.
Seen Nowhere Boy, which is
Nowhere
a great
Boy,
film.
Yep, that's a great film. But maybe to see more of a collective sort of how the Beatles formed, or maybe a unique perspective.
I don't think we really need it, because there's so much.
It could be just so much interest surrounding the Beatles. I think that would be a story that many people would want to.
This is what Walk Hard parody, like when they have like all the actors who look nothing like the Beatles, they would just end up like that scene.
So very quickly, Lizzie, would you recommend this film?
I think so. Yeah, I think even though it has those kind of cheesy moments and it does have some pacing issues, I actually disagree with you about the use of the Queen music. I don't mind that, because we're going to go into it. We all know it's going to be Queen.
Yeah.
We all want to hear Queen. And I think as well, it is interesting to kind of talk about, it's got a very sort of uplifting ending. And people did say, oh, you know, did we want to see the darker side of what happened with Freddie and his illness? But I think at the same time, it's that question of, we don't own people's stories as an audience. And should we have ever had to put somebody's struggles on like that? You know,
Brian May and Roger Taylor do. And I think they kind of made themselves look a little...
They made themselves look better, but at the same time, I don't think we as an audience, because people complained about it, I don't think we as an audience have a right to somebody's darkest times like that.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Do you think that the producers of the film rely too much on Queen itself to sell the film?
Which I don't inherently have a problem with, but like I said, they could have focused in the story a bit.
I think as well that that's the problem with the existing Queen members, because for a period of time, they wanted Freddie to die halfway through the film.
Yeah, with the Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah, and then they were like, because then it's like, oh, how we overcame, you know, losing Freddie. And it's like, no, everyone wants to see Freddie. I'm sorry, you're all great musicians, but we love Freddie Mercury and we want to see him.